I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and our guest today is Jack Vanek. If you don't know Jack, she's 1/3 of The Lady Gang, 1/3 of The First Degree podcast, and she is the CEO and head designer of her own fashion company, Jack Vanek. We talk with Jack about all her jobs, and then we dive into her emo past and how that shaped her reading habits. Remember, you can find everything we talk about on today's episode by clicking the link in the show notes. Also in the show notes are links to the social media accounts of The Stacks and our guests. If you'd like to have myself and my guests suggest a book for you on air, email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com. You send us your name, what you're looking for in a book, and then we'll discuss it on air and give you something we think you should read. It's super easy. You just email askingthestacks@gmail.com. If you like this show and want to support the work we're doing, here are a few easy ways you can help. Join us on Patreon. You earn perks like our virtual book club, and your contribution helps to keep The Stacks up and running. It's a great way to connect with other listeners, and personally, it means a whole lot to me. So head over to patreon.com/thestacks. Lastly, and perhaps most easily, and certainly the most free, you can subscribe to The Stacks, and you can leave us a rating and a review. It's so easy, it almost seems like it wouldn't matter, but it does. It really, really does. All right, now that all that business is out of the way, let's get to our conversation with Jack Vanek. All right, you guys, we're here today. Our guest is Jack Vanek. Jack is a CEO of the Jack Vanek fashion and lifestyle brand. She's also super famous for being 1/3 of the Lady Gang. And she's also 1/3 of the First Degree podcast, which is a true crime podcast. So Jack, welcome to The Stack.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm the final Lady Ganger to be on. So I feel good to be your last.
Save the best for last.
Better be the best.
Yeah. Don't let us down.
I won't.
Okay. We're going to start just, you know, at your birth. Tell us about yourself. Where'd you grow up? How did you become the first version of Jack, which is like the fashion Jack?
Oh my gosh. Well, that wasn't actually the first version of the Jack. The first version of Jack was an embarrassing emo kid.
Start there.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Orange County, California. My parents still live in the house that I was born in Southern Orange County. I grew up around like the OC Housewives. Like that was like the area that I grew up in.
Okay.
I was a cheerleader in high school. And then when I was 16 years old, I went to my first concert and it kind of changed the trajectory of my life and what I was interested in. It was the first time I ever fell in love with anything.
Oh my gosh.
I loved music so much. I'd go to concerts all the time. And then I would start kind of, before blogging was a thing, I had an online journal. And I would
like a live journal?
I had a live journal.
Of course.
Did you have a live journal?
No, but we're right in that age range that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
An LJ?
Yes, an LJ. There was Zanga. I remember those.
No, I don't.
That was like even more of a niche kind of thing than Live Journal was. So I had my Live Journal. I'd talk about making out with boys and bands and hanging out and partying. And I got like a pretty big following from it, turned to MySpace. And while I was in college, my mom was like, you need to help pay your way through college. So figure it out, go get a job or do something else. So I came up with the idea of selling these bracelets with different kinds of words on them. The first word was Ruthless. It was after one of my favorite songs, and sold them in my backpack at concerts and on my MySpace page. And it kind of blew up from there and became the originating Jack Vanek brand. So,
oh my God. What was the concert? The first one?
The first concert I went to was Sugar Colt and Finch. They're both like emo bands back in the day.
Do you still love concerts?
Oh yeah. Well, my boyfriend's a musician,
right?
So I'm still going. I can't escape it. It's just part of my DNA now. But I do. There's such a, like, a nostalgia to it for me, and it was such a big part of my youth that it makes me feel young still, and it brings me, like, it makes my heart happy.
Okay, but how did you decide to go from I love music, I love going to these concerts, I'm totally into this vibe, this scene, to I'm going to sell bracelets here?
Well, so I really just wanted to be a rock star. Like, that was, I'm like, I want to be in a band. I want to travel the world.
Do you play any instruments?
No.
Do you sing?
No.
Okay.
Have a terrible voice.
Got it.
I played piano growing up, but not well. Okay. And so I don't have any musical ability, but I was like, okay, I have a degree in design. I went to UCLA for graphic design, and I'm like, and I have this following on the internet. So how can I become a rock star in using these two skills that I have, basically? So there was no, like, you know, mind-blowing reason why I started what I was doing, other than the fact that I was kind of boy crazy and I wanted to travel around the world and kind of do things my way.
Yeah. And then, so you start selling these bracelets. Were people receptive to you, or were they like, who's this girl?
Both.
Okay.
So, like, kids around the country, like, my quote unquote fans, I guess you could say, like, loved me. But anybody that was in the music industry was very skeptical, because, I mean, I was still kind of like making out with all these boys in the process. So I was almost not let on tours because of that. And I wasn't taken seriously because of that. And because I was just a girl in a boy's world, you know, girls aren't really taken seriously at all in the music scene. So I had a lot to prove, but I wasn't going to stop making out with boys in the process.
You're like, I'm happy to keep selling these things, but I still have to definitely be making out.
Yeah. Like, I'm not,
that's I'm here not, for the makeout.
Yeah. Always here for the makeout. But, you know, I ended up selling on the tours that I went on. I'd be like the top seller in merch, and I wasn't even playing music, you know, where all these other bands were performing and their fans were coming.
So how were you, like, logistically, where were you selling merch?
So have you ever been to the Warped Tour before?
No.
Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Okay. It's like it doesn't exist anymore, but it was like a traveling punk rock music tour. Okay. It would go around the country 2 months out of the year. And, you know, bands would play, they'd have a bunch of stages, and each band would have like a merch pop-up tent.
I see.
So I had one of those, like a 10x10 tent, pop it up, have my merch.
But it was just like you and your bracelets.
Just me and my bracelets. And then I started making t-shirts and stuff, but it was just, me and my merch.
And then you took the whole thing basically online. You don't travel with Jack Vanek.
Not anymore.
Things anymore.
No. And that was only like a few months out of the year. It wasn't all the time. It was basically just my excuse to go travel. But I'd make a lot of money doing it. So it was awesome. But that I kind of started when e-commerce first was starting.
Right.
Amazon wasn't even really a thing when I first started selling bracelets. So I was selling them on my MySpace page. People would pay PayPal. It was all through email. I'd ship them out of my parents' living room. It was very DIY. But, you know, the more that e-commerce sort of was evolving, I was jumping on that. And then I just took it all online.
Obviously, it's changed, but like, is it easier now or harder now? Or
so much easier.
So much easier.
Well, I do my stuff. I print my stuff on demand now. So before, I had to have, you know, a warehouse and inventory, which is terrifying, and employees and all this. And now I'm like a one man show again. So it's awesome. It allows me to do a bunch of other things, obviously, like Lady Gang and stuff. But it's changed a lot, and it's made it a lot easier for, you know, people starting a brand to be able to do it, where before it's like, if you didn't have money or manpower, it was pretty much impossible.
Right. And what do you say to people now who are like, Jack, I want to start my own Tracy Thomas bracelets?
I mean, anything to do with inventory, I'm like, don't do it.
Okay.
Holding inventory was the biggest nightmare. I mean, I have told the girls when we first started doing merch, I'm like, uh-uh, we can't do this. Because you just sit on dead money for so long.
Right.
And you don't know, if you don't have all these tools to figure out what people are going to be purchasing, it's like, you don't know. You're like taking a crapshoot, being like, I guess I'll make 300 of these things and hope they sell. But, you know, chances are they won't. Mm. So it's a very... it's a very competitive business. E-commerce is so oversaturated now. Right. So it's difficult, but you know what? If you have like the strength and you keep going through it and have thick skin and don't mind like sleepless nights and a lot of anxiety, then go for it.
Have fun. Go do it.
Yeah.
Did any of it come super easy for you, or was it all just like in the beginning, just like terrifying besides the making out?
Yeah. Well, making out's the best. In the beginning, I feel like I was very lucky. Okay. Like I didn't, you know, it's not like I was curing cancer or anything. Like I came up with a very simple idea and I was in the right place at the right time, especially like the right time in, you know, like internet fandom and all that kind of stuff. It was like the first wave of quote unquote internet celebrity.
Right.
And I just happened to be in it in our little like niche scene. But I mean, I've worked my ass off and I've, you know, had a lot of trial and error and I've never really given up. So, and I've had a lot of setbacks too. Like it's really easy to like look at somebody from the outside and be like, oh, well, that's so easy for her to do all this. But it's like, you don't like with anything, it's like, you don't know what's happening behind closed doors.
Right. Cause it's not like you're posting on social media, like, hey, this nightmare thing happened. Like my inventory went up in flames.
Hey, like did not make any money this year at all. Though it looks like it's a hard world because, you know, even if you're making $1 million, like maybe you're putting $1.5 million in. So it's a hard business to get ahead in.
And now that you're back to the one woman, you know, just you pushing your cart down the street, selling bracelets, do you like that being back to like super streamlined, or do you miss kind of like the anxiety of all the rest of it?
I don't miss the anxiety at all. I mean, now I have anxiety in different parts of my life.
Sure,
and,
of course.
You know, it's
like a vacuum.
Yeah. And we're doing like the same kind of thing with Lady Gang and with the First Degree. And, you know, I'm starting a couple other things like on the side. So I have that like startup, like entrepreneurial spirit within me. So I'm always going to have anxiety. But the thing that I learned the most through the Jack Vanek business is to diversify what I'm doing and to not put all my eggs in one basket, because that is what was causing me so much anxiety every night. Cause it's like, this thing could fail any moment. Like the market can change, how things work can change, and I could be left with nothing. Like I've never had an investor. I've never taken out a loan, thank God. But like, I don't have, you know, the big guys like backing me up. It's just little old me.
It's you.
So
it's
hard.
Okay. How did you become part of Lady Gang?
Okay. So,
because I know that Becca and Kelty kind of like started it.
Yes.
And then they needed another person.
Right.
But who are you?
So, Kelty and I have a mutual ex-boyfriend.
Oh. Perfect.
There's this band called Panic at the Disco. He was a guitarist back in the day, not in the band anymore. I dated him when I was 18 years old for 3 months.
On one of these tours.
We actually met through LiveJournal.
Okay.
He had a LiveJournal and was stalking me. And just kind of met through that. It was before they kind of like blew up when, like back in the day. We broke up and then he started dating Kelty. They dated for a few years. They're way more serious than us. They broke up and then her and I were kind of both in the same sort of scene, like orbiting each other, would run into each other every once in a while. And then when she came up with the idea to start Lady Gang, she's like, you know what? We need somebody cool. I know somebody cool. Called me out of the blue. I'm like, why is Kelty Knight calling me? Like, there is no reason for her to call me.
Did you guys ever like hang out, or was it always just like, oh, hi?
Never hung out with her in my life.
Did you even like her, or were you like, that bitch stole my boyfriend?
Well, no, I was over that at that time.
Okay.
Because that was, I don't know, it was probably like 8 or 10 years later.
Okay.
So, you know, we both had grown up by then.
Got it.
When they were dating, of course, I was like, this stupid bitch, like, I hope that their relationship crashes and burns too.
And you got your wish.
I know, and I did get my wish. Thank God for both of us. But yeah, we weren't friends. Like, we were acquaintances, for sure. But I think that that's like a big reason why Lady Gang works, is like none of us were best friends when we started it. And, you know, we started this on a very like business level. And even though we are super close now, it always kind of has that underlying theme to
it. Like, you guys are partners.
We're partners, yeah. Partners first and, you know, friends second, really. So
this is so funny to think that she just called you like, hey, just now that I know Kelty better, it makes sense.
Yeah, like, of course. Like, she cold called me.
Yeah.
But it was good because I was at a point with my brand where, again, it was the only thing that I was doing, and I was like hit a plateau,
right,
like mentally and professionally. And I'm like, I need something else to kind of put my time into. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Lady Gang came around at a really good time for me.
And you guys had no idea it was going to become this.
No idea.
Because now Lady Gang's like a big thing. You have a TV show, you have a network, you go on tour.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. We started it thinking that it would be very celebrity focused.
Yeah.
And the guest would kind of drive everything that we would do. And we would sort of add color and throw questions out every once in a while. And it's turned kind of inward where now all of our girls are really invested in our lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just talk about being a woman in general.
Yeah.
And I feel like people resonate with that even more so than sometimes if you get like an A-list celebrity. Yeah.
I remember when you guys first started, because I was friends with Becca.
Yeah.
She was like, we're going to start a podcast. Like, what do you think? Because I was like the only person Becca knew who listened to podcasts.
Oh, really? I've been listening to listening to?
This is truly how you'll see deep into my soul. I've been listening to this podcast called The Tony Kornheiser Show since 2010, January 2010.
Okay. What is it?
It's a used to be a sports radio show.
Okay.
And it was for the first like 7 years. And so you'd get it a day late. He would record it for the sports on the radio in Washington, D.C., and then they'd put it on podcast the next day.
Oh, my God.
2 hours a day. Because it's a radio show. They right. just take it. And I've been listening 2 hours a day to Tony Kornheiser, who is a 71-year-old white Jewish man in Washington, D.C., talk about sports and just bitch about things. And he is truly my inner self. That's who I am. I am him. I love sports and I love being crabby.
That is so random.
Yeah. And I've been listening since. So like when Serial came out, I was like ready for it.
Yeah.
I listened to the first pilot. I was like, oh, I'm ready for podcasts. And everyone else was like, what's a podcast?
That's
like,
how
what's
I was.
This purple square on my phone? I'm like,
like, is it like old timey radio?
Exactly. But I was like, no, I've been doing this for years. All my friends were like, how did you know about Serial? I was like, because it was 3 years into my
you're like, it was like my 10th podcast on my list, and there's only 10 podcasts out there.
Yeah. Becca was like, should we do a pod? Like, what do you think? And I'm like, I think it's a great idea. I'll have something else to listen to besides Tony Kornheiser.
Like, it's great for me.
Personally.
It's great for me.
Since there'll only be two listeners, like me and your parents.
Yeah. That's so Tony Kornheiser.
Yeah. If you've ever watched PTI, it's a sports show on ESPN. No. It's him and this guy, Mike Wilbon. And they're like two sports journalists. And it's called Pardon the Interruption. And they talk about sports stories. Uh-huh. But he's been on the radio for years. He was a journalist at the Washington Post, at the New York Times. If you saw him, you would literally be like, like, I was listening to him when I was 24.
Right.
Just casually.
Weird.
It's so weird. It's the weirdest show, but I love it. And I like can't start my day without it. It's like that in the daily every morning.
2 hours, though.
Now they're about 135 to 140 because now it's just a podcast.
Right.
He left the radio, so he kind of has more control over it. But
and you're every day still.
Pretty much.
That's so funny.
I haven't listened yet today, but you better believe my ride home.
Yeah, you're like, I can't
sleep.
I need
to know what happened because his football team is the Washington Redskins, and they played Monday Night Football, which was last night.
Yeah.
So I have to hear him talk shit because they lost really bad. So I'm like,
you're like, I need your commentary, dude. Yeah. That is so funny.
It's the weirdest thing. Anyways, so Lady Gang happens, blah, 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 blah. You guys become stars. You talk about lady things and celebrity things and all this stuff. And then you also love true crime, and I need to know how First Degree happened.
Yes.
Because that was really, when I saw that, I was like, this is a turn for me. It's a twist.
Well, it could not be any different. The subject matter could not be any different.
Well, tell people what it's about a little bit and then tell us how you got to it.
Okay. So The First Degree is my other podcast. And my partner is Alexis Linkletter. She's been my best friend for like 12 years.
Oh, okay.
And then Billy Jensen, who's an investigative journalist who wrote the book that we're going to talk about today. So that's my podcast. The premise of the podcast is to tell stories through the First Degree perspective of somebody that's 1 degree away from the murder or crime that happened. So we have really interesting connections to crime. Like for our Ted Bundy episode, the guy that was our First Degree connection witnessed his execution. And then an episode that we did recently, our First Degree connection actually found the dead body.
Oof.
So it's not told through the normal like, blah, blah, blah wakes up. And then it's not like a linear story. It's more so told through the eyes of that specific person.
Right. Because everybody has that story where it's like, oh, my neighbor ended up murdering someone.
Well, the reason why we started it, well, we wanted to start the podcast, but we're like, we need a hook because there's so many true crime podcasts out there. What's going to make us different? So we are kind of brainstorming ideas, and Alexis and I were going back and forth about stories that we had connections to. And that's when we had the conversation where we were like, you know, a lot of people are connected to something, whether, you know, how close or far, but have that story of the, like, a hometown murder or something that has happened that has affected them. My boyfriend was on our podcast, and his story was one of his classmates was murdered by his mom. And for him, he wasn't super close with him, but his, what he took from it, that was the first time he learned about death.
Wow.
So it was this, the first time he like ever experienced existentialism or anything like that, you know? And he was 9.
Wait, what? The mom murdered her son?
It was so messed up.
That's dark.
Yeah. She strangled him, and she was on meth. And she ended up strangling him and then thinking that she was doing it for Jesus. And it was,
oh my God. Okay. I'm going to link to that episode in the show.
Yes, definitely. It's a crazy episode. And it's just an interesting perspective because, you know, everybody kind of remembers when they learn about death for the first time, and it affects you in such a, like, a profound way that still is with you as an adult.
Right.
So, holy
shit. That's a really intense. So I'm like, I'm shook.
Well, and it's, but that one was crazy because there was nothing online about it. And Alexis has access to like all these newspapers. Mm. So that's how she gets a lot of her information. And there was so much that my boyfriend didn't know and his mom didn't know. Like it's crazy the things that you can drum up.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk about more about murder. We're going to do that on the next episode where we talk about Chase Darkness with me. Cause I feel like that kind of ties in, but
absolutely.
I'm feeling creeped out.
Yeah.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. sleepnumber.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, so before we dive into your reading life, we do this thing called Ask the Stacks where someone sends in a question. They ask like for a book recommendation. Okay. I haven't prepped you, but this one is totally going to be in your wheelhouse, I think.
Okay.
So the person's name is Kennedy. Here's what she says. I'm looking for some nonfiction books that are a little under the radar. I specifically love true crime and know a concerning amount of information about certain cases. I can only get into nonfiction if there's personal stories or some kind of emotional connection. And she's looking for nonfiction books that maybe speak to like culture or society as a whole.
Okay.
And so she said a few that she loved. She loved Columbine. She loved Bad Blood. She loved a book called Fall and Rise, the story of 9/11. And she wasn't super into Lost Girls, the unsolved American mystery. Do you know that one?
No.
It's about the Long Island killer.
Serial killer?
Yeah.
Lisk. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll go first. I'll give some recommendations if anything pops into your head. So the first one I said, Kennedy, is kind of, it's not under the radar. It's actually like huge right now. It just came out like last week. But since you said you like that 9/11 book, there's a book that just came out called The Only Plane in the Sky. It's by Garrett M. Graff. And it's an oral history of 9/11. And it has a lot of personal connections because it's all people's stories from the day. And it goes from people who were in the buildings to people whose husbands or wives were on the planes to George Bush in Air Force One to people at the Pentagon. So it's like super personal connections.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
Is it like an anthology? So each story has a little, are they all tied together?
It's all tied together. So it's like, it'll be like the morning or like the night before. And it's all these people like talking about the night before. And then it's like the morning of, and then it's the first plane. And then it's in Florida. And then it kind of like takes you through the day chronologically.
Oh my
gosh. People will just pop in. And some people come in through the book a ton. And some people are there just for one moment.
That's so interesting.
It's so amazing. It's really intense. So I just want to warn everyone, the first third of the book is like your heart is like racing. Like I was reading it at night and I had nightmares. So I woke up in the middle of the night to keep reading to get to a place where I felt better.
Does it ever feel better though?
After the first third, it kind of like, because you know what happens on, you remember 9/11.
Yeah.
Like after the first, I guess it's 102 minutes, there's no more attacks. And both the buildings have fallen.
Right.
So it's kind of kind of calm down a little bit. But until you get to that point, you're kind of just like, oh my God, there's more. Like, this is so terrible. Like, I know what's like, you just feel like, ooh.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, amazing, amazing. Okay. Then the other two are less well known. The second one is one of my favorite books. It's called 1,000 Lives by Julia Shears. It's about Jonestown.
Ooh.
But she does an amazing job of really focusing on the victims and the people who were there as opposed to Jim Jones.
Yeah.
Which makes a huge difference.
It makes all the difference. And that is a big problem, especially in true crime.
Yeah, that it's like always about the bad guy. And like, I love a bad guy. Nicki Minaj, we love a bad guy.
Chun-Li, my gosh.
But this book she does a good job of telling his story, but also telling like why someone would join a cult.
So I have something to add to that. So we did a Jonestown series on our podcast, and our first reconnection was Jim Jones Jr.
Yes.
So our story was kind of told through his perspective. And a big thing that we were pushing throughout that podcast was that message, because I hate nothing more than when people say that, you know, only stupid people join cults, or how weak do you have to be? It's like, actually, a lot of people that ended up joining cults are so intelligent,
right?
So educated, so well-versed, and are looking for something bigger than themselves.
Totally. And she does a great job in this book of being like, nobody joins a cult. Nobody's like, I'm going to go join a cult today. It's like you find people that you believe in or that are talking about things you believe in.
Yeah.
She also outlines like so much of the ministry of Jim Jones and Jonestown and the People's Temple was that it was a lot about like racial equality and civil rights and all this stuff.
He was representing something good.
And it was a community of black and white people living together. And Jim Jones Jr. is a black guy.
Yep.
Like he adopted a black kid and gave him his name. Like there's a lot about Jim Jones and what happened there that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Until the end, when it all of a sudden makes no sense and is very sad.
Yes.
And then the last one is this book called The Lynching by Lawrence Leamer. And it's about a lynching that took place in 1981 in Alabama. But it's also about the history of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it kind of went under the radar a little bit, but it's a really great book. It has a true crime element about the lynching, but then a lot of history about the Southern Poverty Law Center and also the KKK. It was was the KKK's last like official lynching, according to authorities that decide what an official lynching is. So it's kind of like that part's a little iffy, but
yeah, a little gray,
but it's 1981. So it's pretty late in the day. So those would be my three recommendations. Did anything pop into your head?
So this one isn't. So one of the next books that I want to read is Bad Blood. Have you read it?
Yeah, we did it on the show.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. It looks incredible. And I love like a Firefest kind of
It's a total scam job.
Yeah. This one isn't under the radar, but I mean, it has a connection with Billy's book, but I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara. Right. And that is like literally a personal account of her trying to catch the Golden State Killer. I haven't read it yet. I'm going to read it I did finish this book, but after we talk about this, that'll be the next book that I read, probably before Bad Blood. But I mean, that's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good one. I was really excited when it came in, and then I was like, oh, I'm saving this until Jack comes on because she'll be into
true crime stuff. It's a lot easier to connect to something like that when you do have that personal storytelling element.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, a lot of people say they don't like nonfiction, but my response is almost always like you're either not reading the right nonfiction or you're not reading narrative nonfiction, because so much narrative nonfiction is storytelling. It's just telling a true story.
Right.
It's like a good documentary versus like a boring documentary.
Exactly.
You know, so that's my feeling. Okay, we're going to talk about you now.
Okay.
two books you love, one book you hate.
Okay, so two books. I brought some books with me.
Okay.
My favorite book in the entire world. I did not bring my favorite book in the entire world because it has a whole personal story about it that I can explain.
Yes.
Is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close by Jonathan Safran Foer.
So good. 9/11.
9/11, yeah. I think that he is the most beautiful writer. Mm. And I love that he tells that story through a child's perspective, but with like the words of a like beautifully well-spoken adults. Like, I think it ties those two things together really, really well. And then my other favorite book is Catcher in the Rye. And it's funny because this is my copy from when I was in high school. It's beat to shit. And it's all like marked in.
I'm going to take a picture of you holding it right now so I can put on the social media and see her little Catcher in the Rye. Okay. Got it.
So, I loved reading in high school. I can explain that story later too. One of my teachers just made me fall in love with reading.
You can explain it now.
Okay.
So we'll skip that one later.
Cool. So my sophomore AP English teacher, her name was Mrs. Nusman. I'm still friends with her today. She was like the Tuesdays with Maury teacher that changed my entire life when I was a kid. She was the first teacher that I ever had that loved teaching. She loved the kids. Like, she had such a passion for connecting with people. And when she would introduce every book, we'd walk into the classroom and she'd like have a whole like setup and she'd be in a costume like for Lord of the Flies. She like dressed up like she was on the island.
What year were you?
This is when I was a sophomore in high school. So I was like 16. But that's when I read The Catcher in the Rye, and it was like the first book that I really fell like deeply, deeply in love with. So, but I lost the copy of this and I was desperately trying to find it. And I was searching everywhere at my parents' house. And then one day I just went in my room and it was sitting in the middle of my room. It was like one of those like glitches in the Matrix. Weird. Where it just showed up
like it
out
was
of nowhere.
There all along.
Yeah.
And wait, why don't you have the copy of Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close?
Okay. So, I have it. It's at my house. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite book of all time. Same thing as like I had written in it and marked in it. And when I was like in my early 20s, I had lent it to like one of my best friends in the entire world. And he read the whole book and then sent it back to me. And he knows how much I love like notes and that kind of stuff. So he had like written all in it, wrote all of his notes, wrote me a letter in the back. And a few months ago, he passed away. Mm. And so now my friendship with him kind of like lives in that book because that's like all I have left of him.
Right.
But I haven't brought myself to like actually open it yet. So I like left it at home because I'm like, I don't want it. And I don't want to lose it.
No, of course.
It's my most prized possession probably ever.
Oh my God.
It's such a wonderful book and I would be so bummed if I ever lost it or this one.
So you are a writer, a person who writes in books.
Oh my God. I love it.
all in.
All in. Yeah. I think, I mean, there's so much, books are so personal and they're such a personal gift. And you put so much of yourself into a book when you're reading it. And I think to kind of, you know, even like highlight or underline or mark it, it's like you're kind of giving a little bit of yourself to it. So I think that it's just such a special thing.
I love that. I never write in my books.
You don't?
No, but I love a used book, especially if there's like notes or something in it.
Yeah.
So I, part of me is like, maybe I should just start writing in my books.
Yeah.
Just so that when I give them away that I'm like leaving that joy for someone else to find.
I just think it's such a little, it's such a like little joyful spark that's in a book.
It's true. I did have, I had a, my copy of Beloved I got is used, and the person who wrote it before me was using like a purple pen, and it was really annoying to me though. I was like, why do you have a purple pen? Like, who is this person?
Like, how old is it? Like, a gel pen?
Like, what's happening? Like one of those sparkly jelly rolls or something? No.
Well, I love it. I used to get all my books used because I would hope for that. Like, I'd hope that I'd get a book that has,
or like a phone number or something.
Yeah, or like a note to somebody else that, you know, like as a gift. I just think it's such a,
I love that.
Such a personal touch.
Yeah, that's one of the, that's the best part of used books.
Yeah.
What about a book you hate?
I was trying to think about a book I hate. Like, I am a very, like a fair weather reader, I would get, I'd say. So if I don't like a book, I just
put it down.
Yeah.
You don't even like, get to the place of like,
no,
I hate this.
Like I, and it, you know what sucks is I don't read as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. And I think that being on your podcast is going to really like inspire me to read more. But, so if something's not like completely like gathering my attention, I'm like, eh,
yeah,
whatever.
What made you stop reading as much?
Just getting busy. And I don't know, once I get out of a habit of something, it's kind of hard to get me back into it, but I am really enjoying audiobooks because it's just basically like a podcast.
Yeah.
But then you can't really write in your audiobook.
It's true. So it's a good audiobook, like a well narrated audiobook is really great, but a not well narrated audiobook is,
oh no,
it's terrible.
Oh God. Is that like, do you think if it's just like a badly spoken author?
No, sometimes maybe, but I think it's also like if the reader's voice is like too pretentious, you know, if they're like, then mother took me to the store.
Oh, gross.
You know, and you're like, okay, like relax.
Yeah,
person.
You need to like actually enjoy the person's
voice.
Yeah,
you need them to have like some energy
right
behind it. Do you have any favorite audiobooks you've listened to?
I just started listening to this one for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah, this is my first one, and it's Billy, so it's like I talk to him all the time.
And he reads it, right?
He reads it. Yeah, he narrates it.
I think it's really good when it's nonfiction if the author can read it most of the time, unless it's like super nonfiction and the author's like not a good speaker, but
right.
Billy talks
right
a lot for his life.
Yeah, and if it's a personal story like that, it's like that obviously comes through rather than some stranger, I guess, reading your words.
Totally. What's the last really great book you've read?
One of the best books that I've read recently, which is random, is I went to the Dalí Museum outside of Barcelona. Uh-huh. I was just in Barcelona. And I just bought the book to go along with all of his works that were in that museum. And it was incredible. He's my favorite artist of all time.
Yeah.
So it was super interesting to kind of learn all of his wacky
he's
mind.
A weird dude
yeah. Weird dude, but like decent dude, like not
weird, a bad guy,
not that I've seen. I kind of did that because I was like talking about how much I loved him. I'm like, I need to make sure that he hasn't
right like
done anything bad. So nothing that I have found, but he's just a weird guy, and I enjoy the quirkiness.
Right. Okay, you told us what you're looking forward to reading. So how do you pick your next book? Like, how do you decide what? Do you like read about things? Do you just wait for a friend to tell you this is it?
I take like recommendations, or, you know, like online now, it's like if you're in Facebook groups, especially right. like in the true crime ones, like if you keep hearing the same thing over and over and over again, that's how Bad Blood was. And
right.
like, God, I need to freaking read this now.
Oh my God. Had you not heard about the story before?
No.
Oh my God.
I just heard it was like the Firefest of Silicon Valley.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it came before Firefest.
Yeah, but that's how people are like describing it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Such a scam. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear what you think.
I love a scam.
It's so good. And there's like documentaries about her and stuff. And there's a podcast.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. There's a podcast, and then there's a documentary on HBO or something, and then Jennifer Lawrence is going to play her in a scripted version.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Jesus. Which is why I'm like, wait, you didn't hear about it until after Firefest?
No.
Oh my God. It's everywhere.
That's so funny.
The book is really good. The guy who wrote it is the journalist who broke the story.
Oh, really?
So it's really good. There is one part in the book where he's like talking, and then he's like, then I come in. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, excuse me. Like, it's the one part of the whole book where I was like, this is a nightmare.
You're like, this is why, no, I don't want, a different narrator, please.
Yeah, it was something like, it's like, and then he called a journalist that he knew he could trust.
That's
and then it was
me.
Like, the start of the next chapter is like, so I got an email from Bob. Like, okay, John Kerry. We were like
you know, you've been waiting for this moment to be like, and then I save the day.
It's like, do you know who the hero of this story is? This guy.
That is so funny.
Now, when you get to it, you're going to be like, oh, that's
like,
the moment.
I know.
That's the moment. What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
What did I have on my list? Let me open up my notes. I mean, I always recommend Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. And then, I mean, I'm a huge Bukowski fan.
Okay.
Only of poetry.
Okay.
I don't like his like stories.
Are you into poetry normally or just?
I like poetry. Yeah. I was a big poetry fan when I was younger, but, Bukowski can go like great and then terrible in my mind. So, I like recommending his books. And then, God, what else did I have to recommend to people? I love like all the classic books that we read in high school.
You do. You're like the only person ever to ever say that.
Really?
On the show. Yeah.
Oh, like I love like a 1984 or like a Lord of the Flies or stuff like
okay,
that.
Okay. Not classic.
No, I mean.
Not like the Russians.
Oh, no. I mean, just like kind of like the literary like English class books.
Got it. Like the one. Yeah. To Kill a Mockingbird. Great Gatsby.
Yes.
All of those. Did you actually read them in school?
I did. Well,
because you had that teacher.
I had that teacher and she made it fun.
Yeah, because you're the only person ever said that. Most people say one of those books for the books they hate.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Like what? Like which ones?
Well, Catcher in the Rye comes up.
Catcher in the Rye is polarizing though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of it. But I also read it late. I read it at like 22 or 23 on my own. And I feel like if you're not 16,
that's why it hits your angsty teenage soul when you're reading it. And I feel like you identify with Holden more than you would as an adult. Cause now I'm sure if I read it again, I'd be like, he's such a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, who's this child? Not interested in you. Thanks for playing. But it's all of those books have been said. Most of those books have been said as hate or love.
Yeah.
Like they're all kind of polar. And I think it depends on your teacher.
Yes.
And when you read it.
And the connotation. Yeah.
And like how you had to write about, like, I think there's a lot in the way that books are assigned in school and how that can affect.
Yes. Like how happy you are when you read it.
Yeah.
Another book that I love that's kind of in that vein, but I think I read it in high school, but I don't remember a lot of other people reading it as a separate piece. Did you ever read that?
I didn't read it.
It's so good. It's the same. It's like a coming of age tale with two boys that are at a boarding school. But one of your questions was like, what's one of your favorite characters? Mm-hmm. So there's this character, Phineas, in that book that is one of my all time favorite characters in any novels. And so much so that I'm like, Phineas, should I name my first child that? But it's like the nicer version of Catcher in the Rye, I guess, in my mind.
I've never read it. I know people do read it in school, but it's not quite as common as
a Great Gatsby kind of thing.
Great Gatsby and To Kill a Mockingbird, I feel like, are the two that are almost always. And then there's some combination of like the rest of them.
Right.
But neither of those books did it for me.
Yeah. What was your favorite book in high school? Did you have any of those books that you liked?
To be honest, I really didn't read a lot in high school.
You didn't?
I didn't like reading in school. I didn't like being told what to read, which is why my first ever book club, besides the one that I had with one other friend, which was just us reading the same book, was the podcast.
Interesting.
I don't like to be told what to read.
Yeah.
I really dislike it. And it basically makes me not like a book from the beginning. I'm like, I don't like this. Someone else told me I had to do it.
So how do you find your books? Not the recommendation.
By myself. I don't know. I go to bookstores. I'll take a recommendation from like a stranger and I'll take a recommendation from a friend, but I won't, like, I could never be in a book club because I would be excited to read the book that I brought to the table. But then you have to wait like 6 months while everyone else in the book club brings their stupid book. And I'm like, I don't want to read, you know, no offense, but like, I don't really want to read Jodi Picoult. Like,
right.
I'm just not into that. And
right.
I appreciate you Karen, that that's the book that you want us all to read. But like, I'm not going to be here that month.
Yeah, you're like, this is not for me.
So like, in high school, we were assigned Malcolm X, and I didn't read it in high school, and I read it afterwards. It was an African American history class. Yeah. I don't think most people have it in their like normal English class.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't read it at the time, and then I read it after the fact, and it's like one of my favorite books, but I couldn't read it at the time. I like started and I was like, this book is garbage.
Yeah.
Like, what does he know? And now I'm like, my hero.
Did you Sparks notes when you're in high school then? Or how did you even get through class?
Know. I did good. I did fine. I was a straight A student. I don't even remember. I must have read sections and like I paid attention a little bit.
Yeah. Enough to scoot by.
And like, you know, they read aloud in class sometimes. They'd be like, hey, read this scene. I don't know. I must have spark noted.
I loved Sparks.
I was fine. I got into NYU, okay? I was really smart, everybody. Relax. I'm not an idiot.
I swear to God. Just don't tell me what to read.
I was good at school.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't do the work. Like, I figured out school.
Yeah.
Some people don't figure it out, so they do all the work. Like, I figured out how to make school.
You figured out how to cut corners.
Yeah.
Correctly.
Like, I learned how to do school.
Yeah, it's basically how you learn how to, like, take an SAT test.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're, like...
Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't learn that part. I'm terrible at standardized testing.
I barely could either.
Terrible.
I'm like, I swear I'm smarter than my score on this test.
Yeah. Well, maybe I thought I was smart because I was getting good grades, but I actually didn't know any of the information because I was, like, cheating in school, but whatever. This isn't about my academic... This is about your reading. Stop. Mom, I swear I did great in school. I appreciate my education.
I wasn't cheating. I promise, I promise, I promise.
Are there things that you wish were different about your reading life?
Yeah, I wish I've read more.
Yeah.
I'm so ADD when it comes to reading. Mm. And as I get older, I feel like once I sit down to like start reading a book, I start thinking about like the million other things that I need to do. So I think that that's a conscious thing that I need to work on.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I mean, almost every night I would sit in bed and I would have like a glass of scotch and then I'd put on like Record. It was all part of my...
I was picturing like an 8-year-old you and then you said scotch and I'm like, okay, she doesn't mean that young.
You never know. No, I mean like in my early 20s.
Got it.
That was kind of my thing. And I'd read and write kind of at the same time too. I was like really big in writing when I was younger on my stupid typewriter. I was so emo.
Oh my God, I love it. You were reading your poems.
Yeah, I was writing my poems. I was reading Bukowski. I was like trying to like live it, you know? I'm like, I'm
what
gonna drink
changed?
Some, I don't know. I was very brooding when I was younger. So I think that was like part of my thing where I was identifying through like all these things that I was doing. And then I've just gotten, you know, like as I've gotten busier when I've gotten older, it's easy to make excuses not to,
right?
Kind of, because that's like a form of self-care, you know, with reading a book and having a glass of wine and
right.
just feeling comfy and lighting a candle. So I think it needs to be more of like a conscious thing that I practice rather
right.
than, you know, something that I'm sort of like, I don't know, like feeding my like weird, like
right.
emo ego.
Are you like a goal-oriented person?
Not like a Kelty.
Literally, that's who popped in my head when I said that.
Her and I could not be more different.
Okay.
I'm more scattered and like, more scattered than she is. I'm goal oriented in like in different ways though.
Okay.
Just more of like what's the word I'm looking for? Abstract way.
Okay. Okay. I've never heard that, but I'll take it. And is reading with a candle and a glass of wine, is that your ideal reading setup?
Yeah. Or, you know, on a beach would be nice.
Okay.
Like with like a margarita, always a drink in hand.
Okay.
I feel like
very important.
I'm not a morning reader. Like I've always been a nighttime reader.
You don't fall asleep.
No, I can't fall asleep at all regardless.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not one of those people that like you put a book in front of them and you're like,
that's me. If I read
it
at night, I fall asleep.
So when do you read? And just
all throughout the day,
just never at night.
I set like timers for myself. I'll be like, okay, I have 45 minutes. I'm going to read for 30 of them and I'll put my phone in airplane mode. I'll set a timer and I'll read for 30 minutes.
See, I think I need to do something like that. Cause in my mind, if I get a text and then I'll scroll on Instagram, I think that. Yeah, like our society we're just so used to having so many things coming at us that it's hard to focus. But that's why I'm like, I was really enjoying the audiobook because at least I can do that. I commute a lot. So it's like I can do it when I'm driving or when I'm cleaning.
Yeah.
So it's more, you know, you don't have to stop everything that you're doing.
No, totally. I audiobook in the shower. If I'm not podcasting, if I'm not listening to a podcast or cooking dinner, folding laundry. Just like a good thing.
Yeah, I like that.
Good way to like fill up my time. especially because I'm like, I have a million books to read. Like,
I know.
So I use it to kind of fill in those gaps.
Yes.
How do you organize your books?
So I have a bookshelf, okay, and I've organized them by color.
Me too.
Really?
People are super judgy about it, but you know what? Go fuck yourself.
How, like, mine are just in, so I have like an off-white chunk. I have a black chunk. Mm-hmm. I have a blue chunk. And then I have like a naturals chunk, okay, which sucks. Cause then some of my favorite books I have kind of tucked away
in the naturals.
Like my credenza.
Oh, okay.
Cause I'm like, the cover's ugly.
Oh.
So they're all by like the cover, but, I don't know. It's like, that's how I've organized them. Because it's hard to organize books and have them look like clean and chic.
I like them to be color. I like the color thing. And people get very upset about it. Don't at me. I don't care. That's how I organize my book.
Why? Like, what's the beef?
So there is, well, people think that it's like, oh, if you organize them by color, you don't care about what's in the book.
Oh my God.
But I'm like, no, I just also care about how my house looks.
Yeah, it's more of an aesthetic thing rather than, I have some books up there that I'm like, oh.
Like, I don't go out and buy books that have a green spine for my green section.
Right.
Like, because there are, you know, like if you go to the last bookstore in downtown,
yeah,
there's like all those shelves of like old books where you can just buy like for a dollar.
Just for
like
the aesthetic. Color. Yeah.
I don't do that, but I don't put an orange book next to a purple book because that hurts my eyes.
Yeah. No, that's how I am too. Yeah. All of my books are books that I've had like for a long time.
Yeah. I'm totally for it. But I think some people feel like you're not respecting the book. But I think if you organize a book by alphabetical, by author's last name, why is that any different? That doesn't necessarily say what's in the book. If you organize your book by category, I will give you that. Because I feel like that's like, okay, you've taken the time to really organize your book.
You're making yourself your own library.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're just doing alphabetical by last name, what's the difference?
Yeah.
It's just as arbitrary.
I feel like if you're using books as decor, which is what I do, but again, it's like it's books that I have and love and have read. It's, I mean, you're kind of going for aesthetic.
Yeah.
Rather than,
well, your whole, I mean, my whole house, I'm going for aesthetic, right?
Right.
Like, I want my house to feel like the right vibes. Why would I all of a sudden then be like, but I don't care about these books.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe because I'm very type A, I like things to be organized in that way too. And I think some people just don't care about, like, that doesn't bother them. Like, some people like a more, like, funky aesthetic, and that's just not me. My whole house is white. Like, it's very...
Oh, yeah. Then you have to be... That's how I was too. Like, I'm very... My decor is very minimalist. So I'm like, I need these things to look like it's in their spots and nothing is out of place. And
totally.
I don't want the colors going all... I can't have a... Like, I have this bright green book with me right now. I'm like, that doesn't have a place anywhere. So that's going in the credenza. Yeah. Like, not happening.
My bright colored books are in the guest room.
Yeah.
But they're also color. They like kind of go like red, orange, yellow, green, blue. Like,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I'm a little type A. I got a little Kelty in me, as they
I know.
Say. Not full Kelty, but a little Kelty.
I don't think that you could have a book club podcast without having a little Kelty in
that's
you.
That's correct.
Like, I couldn't have a book club podcast.
I mean, you
podcast.
Could. It just might not be like that good.
No.
You might not read any books.
No.
You just put out an episode like every like 6 months.
I'd be like, oops, forgot again. I got drunk.
Everyone needs a little Kelty.
I know.
What's the last book that made you laugh?
So I was trying to think of this. I was looking at the books that I had. Adam Carolla wrote this book a while ago that was called In 50 Years We're All Gonna Be Chicks or something like that. It's kind of like his random anecdotes through life, but he is such a fucking hilarious writer and just writes how he talks.
Right.
So that book was hilarious. I'm not like a huge, I don't really read a lot of like comedy driven books.
I'm not shocked by this now, learning about your emo past.
Yeah.
makes sense that you wouldn't.
Like, but, I love comedy. I love like stand up and stuff, but I'm never really drawn, like I've never really read a Chelsea Handler or any of those kind of books.
Me neither. But now she's serious.
Yes. Chelsea Handler and her actually comedy days.
Drunk funny Chelsea, not new woke Chelsea.
Which is funny because we're reading a book for the Lady Gang and it's all, you know, it's comedy driven.
Right.
So it's interesting that I wouldn't really be drawn to those kind of books.
But Lady Gang, that's the tone of Lady Gang.
Exactly.
It would be weird if you guys were like a super serious, like,
oh my God,
to those we've lost.
And like,
whoa, what happened?
So now we're writing a drama.
Yeah. What's the last book that made you cry?
Daring Greatly. Brené Brown. Yeah. I mean, incredible writer, incredible story. And her whole, you know, vulnerability just like always like hits me in the chest.
I've never Brené Browned.
Like, you don't like her?
I've just never tried it.
Really?
I just never, it's never been in my
You should
world.
Watch her TED Talk. Her TED Talk is, like, what brought me, like, into absolutely loving her.
So, people who are listening right now to the podcast are going to be like, did you just have this conversation 2 weeks ago with Jenna? And I'm going to say, yes.
You did? Did she bring that up
Jenna
too?
Jenna brought up Brene Brown. I said, I've never read Brene Brown. Jenna said, well, you should start with one of her TED Talks. So,
well, that's probably the way that we all got pulled in. Because, yeah. I mean, her TED Talk has gotten, it has probably right. 20 million views on
right.
it.
And she's an Oprah person, and I love Oprah people. So yeah. It's just, there's no reason I haven't.
She just speaks very candidly and very, like, to the, it just, like, is heart-wrenching in the most human way, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Maybe we'll do a Brené Brown on the show.
You should.
What's the last book that made you angry?
Oh, I have it with me. So this is so not like usually in my wheelhouse. So there's this book called Psychopath 3. I dated a psychopath. And when we broke up, I was so lost and confused and just like broken to the core. Because I'm like, what the fuck happened? Because it's like a whirlwind of a situation. And while I was researching what like... what happened in our relationship, I came across this book, and it's basically it's recovering from emotionally abusive relationships with narcissists, sociopaths, and other toxic people. And the book made me angry, not because I hated the book, but I literally, this is my second copy of the book because I threw the first one away because I was so mad at it. But I literally underlined and highlighted every single line in this book because it was the it was textbook to my ex and what our relationship was. But I, like I said, I had to get rid of it because I'm like, I can't even have this energy around me. But now I'm researching for a potential podcast that I'm doing about psychopaths. But
love that.
Made me very angry. But a very good book for anybody that has left an emotionally abusive relationship.
I love that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
What about a book that made you, a book where you felt like you learned a lot?
So this is funny too. I was like going through all my books. So there's this book called Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming.
I don't know that.
When I was younger, I was super into lucid dreaming.
I don't even know what that is.
So lucid dreaming is basically like realizing that you're awake in a dream. And once you realize that you're dreaming within the dream, you can kind of control your entire dream and do anything you want. So you can fly, you can, you know, make your, the love of your life show up. It's very interesting, but there are all these like exercises that you can practice to teach yourself how to lucid dream. So that book is basically sort of like a manual, but also, you know, different anecdotes of people and what they've used lucid dreaming for in their lives. Like there's some people that have, it's given them confidence in job interviews, or it's helped them make decisions, or it's helped them heal relationships through kind of taking control of your subconscious almost.
Okay.
So that book was really interesting. And then there was another one, but I forget what it was, but that book's amazing.
Are there any books that you're embarrassed that you've never read?
There was, what was the one? There was a high school book that I never read that I was like, which book was it? Was it Pride and Prejudice? I think. Yeah, Pride and Prejudice, never read. But I feel like that's a book that everybody has read in high school.
I read it after high school.
Did you?
Yeah. It's not really for me. Not really.
I don't think it's going to be for me either.
Yeah, I don't think you have to do it. There's no lucid dreaming in there.
No, I bet not.
None at all. Okay, so you have this great teacher in high school. She makes everything amazing. Now, flash forward, Jack, you've decided your third act is going to be as a teacher. What's a book that you're assigning in school?
Okay, so this is funny because I was looking at that question and this is like, it's not really like a book that I feel like high schoolers should read, but I think it's an interesting book for everybody to read, and it's Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus, because, and it was written in like the 50s.
Yeah, it's really old.
Super old. I read it a long time ago. Like I read it in my early 20s when I was going through a different relationship. Okay. And I'm sure it's super outdated and probably misogynistic now.
Right.
However, it deals with like the communication styles of men and women. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much having like being like, okay, why is my partner acting this way? Mm. And I feel like it's an interesting thing for men and women to read, probably maybe like an updated version of it.
Yeah.
That will like maybe throw out the fact that like, well, the woman is in the kitchen.
Right.
But the general ideas of how men and women communicate are really interesting, and how to sort of navigate that, I think is something that everybody could learn from.
Yeah.
But other than that, I, like I said earlier, I loved A Separate Piece. And I think that that is an interesting book that everybody should and would enjoy reading in high school.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to ask you who you want to write the book of your life since you guys are writing your own book,
yes.
Lady Gang book. It's like, do people know when it's coming?
Sometime next summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It's going to be so good.
I can't wait. I think we're going to have all three of you guys on together.
Yes. Absolutely.
It's going to be a shit show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a hard time wrangling you all in. I'm going to have to do it on a Lady Gang show so Kelty can host because I don't know if she's going to give up. It's like The View.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get Barbara Walters not to take over.
Yeah, you know? You can't interview Barbara Walters. Well, it's so funny because I was reading, the way that we wrote the book is like there's a collective Lady Gang voice and then we each have our own chapters or our own essays that we write about. Right. Reading Kelty's, I'm like, this is just, she's so Kelty. All of her stories are so freaking Kelty.
Right.
It's embarrassing, but like in the best way possible.
Oh my God. I can't wait. I'm so excited. Okay. Last one. We always do this one. If you could require the current president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
Emotional Intelligence.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. That's great. Next week, we're going to be back with Jack. We're talking about Chase Darkness With Me by Billy Jensen. It's a true crime book kind of meets memoir. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's going to be spoilers next week. I don't think that there's really much to spoil in the book. So if you haven't read it, I think you're going to be safe to listen. But if you're one of those people that doesn't like to know anything, there might be some slight spoilers, which is all to say, go out, get the book. It's out in the world. You can find it everywhere. Go to your library, whatever you need to do. But Jack, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And we will see you guys in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to Jack for being our guest. Jack is back next Wednesday to discuss Chase Darkness With Me by Billy Jensen. Find everything we discussed on today's show by clicking the link in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out the website, thestackspodcast.com. Remember, get your book recommendations read on air by sending us an email at askingthestacks@gmail.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, go to patreon.com/thestacks. And make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.